Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Green and Black's Organic Chocolate, a selection of ethically sourced flavours combined with a rich cocoa intensity. Welcome back to the Irish Times Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. Well, Storm Ellen has been raging around the place lately, and some of us are a bit confused by new COVID guidelines around the indoor gatherings, the outdoor gatherings, the theatres, the galleries, schools going back or not going back, or what it's going to be like for our children when they are back at school. So all this is swirling around and cases are on the up again, although thankfully there are still a very small number of deaths. And I don't know about you, but I think you're probably in the same boat. 6 months into this pandemic, I am on a kind of red alert for good news, like that story about the two cousins who went paddleboarding in Galway and were swept out to sea and, you know, stuck there for hours and hours and hours all night, clinging to a lobster pot, and were thankfully eventually saved. Apparently they kept themselves sane by singing Taylor Swift songs. Now, I'd have done the same myself, although it's a bit of a moot point because I wouldn't have been on a paddleboard in the first place. But anyway, I loved that story and I'm sure all of you did as well. But do you have any good news? Has anything great happened for you or your family or your friends in the last 6 months? If it has, we want to hear about it as a kind of antidote to this 6 month global pandemic, which is just, I think, getting very exhausting at this stage. Tell us by emailing thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. And the best bit of good news will win a little book bundle from us here at the Women's Podcast. Some great new books to keep you going through autumn. Now, if you don't want to email, send us your good news on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook at IT Women's Podcast. Just put good news in the subject line and let us know your happy happenings. We really need them after 6 months of this. Now, another little bit of good news we heard was about a short film called How to Fall in Love in a Pandemic, which is a short documentary film, a true story of accidental romantics pushed together at a time when most people were being kept apart. So this is a bit of good news that we decided to base this episode on. The film premiered at the Galway Film FLA a couple of months ago and scooped up the award for Best Irish Short Documentary, qualifying it for the Oscars in 2021, which is very exciting. Filmmaker Michael David McKernan met Mimi Wilcox on a weekend away in Chicago. He was from Ireland and he was in Chicago for work. And he matched with her on Tinder in the Windy City. They had a great old time, so much so that Mimi decided afterwards to come to Dublin for a 5-day trip to have a bit more fun with David. But the day that she arrived was March 13th, which, as you know, was the day Leo Varadkar announced lockdown. So her flight and all our air travel was cancelled and she couldn't get home. And so she ended up locking down with David for weeks and weeks in his cottage in County Meath. So using smartphones, because they're both filmmakers, they documented the acceleration of their relationship and tried to make sense of their new romance, asking questions like, how do you fast track matching on Tinder to living together? Well, we heard about it and we just thought we had to get Mimi on to tell us the full story. I think you're really going to enjoy this. Mimi, thank you very much for coming on the Women's Podcast to talk about your really excellent film, How to Fall in Love in a Pandemic. So would you take us right back to the beginning? You're at home on Tinder and you match up with this Irish guy. So take it from there.
Sure. Yeah. So we matched on Tinder and met up on a Friday night. And I think we're able to connect pretty quickly because it turned out that we both had a film background or an interest in filmmaking. And so we just hit it off really well. And since he was only only supposed to be in town for a few days, we decided to just, you know, make the most of it and spend a lot of time together and kind of enjoy Chicago. So yeah, it was a really lovely time.
What kind of things did you do?
So let's see, we did a lot of eating. We went into a Second City show, which is like a famous comedy show in Chicago. So we went and did that together. We went to the Bean, which is the big kind of sculpture in downtown Chicago, and just kind of did the like very touristy things. You know, it's always fun to do, having lived in a city for a long time, kind of seeing it through the eyes of someone who's not been there.
It was a long way for him to come just for a few days. What was that all about?
He'd made a film previously that was screening at the Chicago Irish Film Festival. So he came over just to do that and wound up staying a bit longer. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what was your impression of him from those few days? I mean, you obviously kissed and whatever, you were attracted to each other. You were having lots of fun together, but it was like a whirlwind weekend with this Irish guy that you just met.
Yeah.
What were you left with? What kind of impressions?
You know, I think he was just a really, really kind person, and we really got along really well. And because we really spent so much time together during those few days, it felt like we got to know each other quite well, quite quickly, which was a really fun thing, you know? And we definitely had a lot to talk about. Yeah, he was just really sweet. And it was nice to just have this like very positive, fun thing. It was a great story. It just felt like a really kind of lovely, fun little, you know, capsule romance, as we were calling it.
Yeah. And then he went back home and you were kind of voice messaging back and forth. And we see that in the film. You were texting, you were kind of keeping in touch. And I think it was only a couple of weeks later when you, I think, proposed. It's the kind of thing I would do. I really loved your just, you know, spontaneity. And you said, what about if I just came to Dublin?
Yep.
And that's an amazing thing to do, because I suppose we're all worried about rejection. It was a big thing. You'd only just met the guy. You only knew him a few days. He could have very easily said, no, thanks. You're grand. Stay where you are. Yeah. So why did you feel at that point that that was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes up in the film a little bit that I was going through a pretty difficult time in my life. And I kind of felt that I wanted to do something kind of fun and spontaneous for myself and take advantage of this opportunity to just extend this nice thing a little bit longer, you know, and do something that would, you know, that would be a positive thing for me. And yeah, it was, I guess, certainly a bit of a risk in a lot of ways. I think maybe the fact that he was so far away, it was sort of like, well, if he shoots me down, I won't ever see him again anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, that was good thinking.
But he wound up being on board with it. So.
Yeah, so he was into it as well. He thought it was a great idea. And you made your plans, you bought your ticket. And it was only going to be this 5-day thing, right? So your ticket was 5 days later to come back. So even if it was a disaster, it wasn't the end of the world, because you could just be coming back. But when you arrived in Dublin, as we see in the film, it was the day you went over to Ireland and Leo Varadkar was over in America, in Washington. It was the same day that he stood up at the podium outside the White House and he told Ireland, our nation, that this lockdown was happening. I mean, everyone will remember where they were when this happened, because it was on the 1 o'clock news and it was so serious. So you arrive into a very sort of uncertain situation when the whole of Ireland is on the verge of lockdown. And you are supposed to be staying for 5 days, but that's not how it panned out.
Yeah, the timing of it was so strange, because I really flew over kind of, I think if my flight had been even a day later, I wouldn't have wound up taking it. You know, it was really kind of the last day that it felt sort of normal and safe to fly. And then sort of as I landed, I had the thought of how should I have come here? You know, like, was this even responsible to be on the plane? And it was really kind of, it happened so quickly. And so then, yeah, it was very strange to land in Ireland. And, you know, we had done all these touristy things in Chicago and we were like, great, we'll do all that in Dublin now. And very quickly we realized that was not going to be the sort of tone of the trip, given that everything was pretty shut down. Still in the beginning, I thought it was just, you know, going to be 5 days and, you know, whatever, we'd have a little bit kind of different experience, which we did. But then things escalated so rapidly while I was there, and the situation, you know, both in Ireland and back in the States, you know, got so dire that, you know, my flights got moved, my flights got canceled. And then also it was just a concern of, you know, it doesn't feel like a responsible thing to do to be going on this transatlantic flight right now. So it was, yeah, it was a very strange thing that started out as 5 days and ended up being 2 months.
I mean, it's beautiful in the film where Michael David lives in this cottage in Dunboyne, County Meath. So it looks quite idyllic. It's in the countryside. I mean, it couldn't really be more romantic if it tried in a way. But how did you feel when you were there and it dawned on you that this was going to be much longer than 5 days and you were going to be with this guy? Because I don't know if you've had this before, Mimi, right? But I've definitely had it where you meet someone, right? And you're having all these lovely feelings, okay? And then this thing happens sometimes. It's happened to me. And you meet the guy again and suddenly you can't stand them. Have you ever had that thing? And I'm sure it happens the other way around. But everything they do wrecks your head and it's really annoying. And I was thinking watching it, imagine if that had happened. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you'd have made the film for a start. But yeah, but do you know that kind of way that you can have all these lovely feelings and then they can go very sudden, the way somebody stirs their tea or something happens?
Absolutely. Yeah. I know. I think, you know, we got unbelievably lucky that some kind of, you know, thing like that didn't happen. It was definitely strange, though, in that, you know, we knew each other so little, but very quickly we were spending all day, every day together, you know, and so it really kind of shifted quickly, I think, from a sort of exciting new thing into like, okay, now, like, you know, we're roommates, if nothing else, you know. But we really got on really well, and I feel really lucky that we actually, you know, our relationship deepened and we never had any, you know, major conflicts. I think maybe part of that too is we were constantly kind of checking in with each other. We were both very aware when I made the decision to stay that it was taking a risk and it was possible that, you know, we would either or both of us would start being irritated by the other, but we really made it a point to kind of check in with each other every night and talk about how we were feeling and make sure that things were still feeling okay. So I think it was really just knowing in advance it was quite an extreme situation and trying to communicate really well because of that.
This podcast is brought to you by Green and Blacks, a rich, smooth and truly delicious chocolate experience. And at what point, Mimi, did you decide you were going to kind of, obviously, as you said at the beginning, you're both filmmakers. Was it a pretty instant thing that you were going to kind of document this, or did it happen organically, or was there a decision?
Yeah, it happened pretty organically. You know, I think some of the footage that made it into the film was just recorded before we really had any sense that we would make a film of it, just because, you know, I like to take pictures and videos on my phone a lot, you know, tend to have them out just instinctively. So in the beginning, it was really just organic. I think eventually in our conversations with our friends, people kept saying like, this is a really wild story. Like you're gonna want to document this in some way. You're both filmmakers. And so it was really only much later in my time there that we started documenting a little bit more intentionally and started doing the video diaries. Because we realized, you know, I don't think we still knew that there's going to be a film at that point, but it just felt like something we should document. Mm-hmm. And then kind of very late in my time there, started actually putting it together into something and having a clearer sense of.
And when you started doing that, it's interesting. How did you work together? Because that's another thing that, you know, yeah. So now you're suddenly this couple. And now you're suddenly a couple that's working together, never mind in each other's face 24/7. How did the working together work? Was that as good as it was in terms of the relationship?
Yeah, you know, I think it was, it's funny because I have a documentary background and Michael David had more of a fiction background. And so initially I was kind of thinking more about, oh, you know, maybe you can make some kind of, you know, personal documentary about this. And I had a lot of ideas about that, but as time went on, I became less engaged with it, partially just because I had a lot of work to do. I had, you know, been able to work remotely while I was there. And we had kind of a setup where I would sit in the kitchen and work during the day and he would sit in the living room and work. And so I was finding it more difficult to find the time to kind of engage with it because I was working on a lot of other things. And so at a certain point, I kind of felt like, you know, why don't you just see what, you know, he was really having great ideas and really engaging with what we'd shot. And so I helped set him up with kind of, you know, some of the technical support he needed to figure out how to edit it together, because he hadn't done that before. But then he really took it on more primarily. But the really important thing there was that, you know, obviously it was a very vulnerable thing to do. And so we were really, I remained involved in that. I would, you know, look at kind of everything he put together, and I would tell him that, you know, I was uncomfortable with something or needed something to change. And so there was a lot of trust there, especially after I left and he was still working on it, being sure to, you know, he was very cognizant of.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really short film. I think it's only 10 minutes long. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that was an interesting decision, because you probably had hours and hours and hours of footage. there's a lovely bit in it where, I mean, it really shows that thing of getting to know somebody. And I think you must have started putting the camera up in the kitchen or something, so that just recording various conversations you were having. And he's saying at one point, oh, look, see the way you do that, you kind of zone out, you space out sometimes. And it's like you can really almost in real time see a couple of people getting to know each other's idiosyncrasies.
Yeah.
But also that seemed to be about the fact that you alluded to earlier that you were going through a difficult time. You just had a relationship breakup very soon before meeting him. And you'd been cheated on, and he had also been cheated on in a previous relationship. So you were going through a really hard time, and he needed to allow you the space to grieve that almost, or to deal with that while you were kind of embarking on this new thing. How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, that was a whole, you know, additional layer to it, which we had discussed while he was in Chicago, even, you know, so recent it kind of had to come up. And yeah, that was definitely part of it. And part of being there was that I was, you know, it was strange because we were sharing this experience very deeply and very closely, but then I was also having this entire other experience that was also very intense that was separate from him. And yeah, he was just incredibly, incredibly generous during that time. You know, I did have periods where I, you know, wasn't able to engage, or I was, you know, having a really difficult time. And he really, you know, never held that against me or asked anything from me. And, was just really, really supportive. And we found ways, I think, as the isolation became more difficult too, to just really try to support one another, and really kind of be each other's support systems there. And yeah, I mean, I'm incredibly grateful for it. It was really a generous thing.
Yeah, because emotionally, I was thinking watching it, that's really, really tough. I mean, you've come out of a relationship, because that was a 3-year or a long time relationship.
Yeah.
And that had ended very suddenly in a horrible way. And now you're sort of with this other guy. So on the one hand, you're kind of, as the film says, falling in love in a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, your heart is broken, and you're getting over a broken heart as well. I think it's really interesting. Never mind the pandemic bit, just those two things happening at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. There was a lot happening.
Yeah.
A very intense time. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't do things by halves, it seems.
I know. Kind of dove all the way in.
I mean, you're so cute together, and the lovely dog. What's the dog's name again?
Mila.
And now it's the other thing that's interesting is because he was isolating too, you know, in lockdown on his own. He didn't get to meet his friends, I presume, or he did on Skype, or how did that all go?
Yeah, that was such a funny thing, is that I wound up meeting a lot of his friends, but just on FaceTime, you know. So he had actually met a couple of my friends while he was in Chicago. And so we would FaceTime with them also. But aside from that, yeah, almost everyone I met was just over FaceTime, which was such a funny way to meet people. But, you know, it was better than nothing. I definitely came to appreciate that.
What did his family think, and what did your family think? Because families are funny anyway, and they could be like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I can't entirely speak to what his family thought. They were certainly very, you know, very kind to me. My family wound up actually being really supportive when I was there. They actually were part of, they really encouraged me to stay after the first few days. I think partly just because, you know, the situation in the States was getting so bad, and they didn't have, you know, a great deal of faith in how the government was going to handle it, which, you know, is fair. And so they really kind of felt that I was safer in Ireland, and they felt like, you know, you're comfortable, you know, you have someone there with you, you're not alone. You know, it's beautiful and idyllic, and it seems like you're much safer in this, you know, very sort of remote cottage than you would be in your, you know, densely packed apartment in Chicago. And so they I think were a little startled when I first flew over there. But once I was there, they were really extremely supportive. Yeah.
So then it comes to the end of your time, and you kind of, I was expecting maybe that you just stayed there and you didn't go back to America and then you just lived happily ever after in Ireland, but, but you actually booked a ticket back, and yeah. The end of the film is you leaving to go back, which was obviously a big wrench because you had become so close. You, I think the day before you left or the day you left, that you both told each other you loved each other.
Yeah.
Which is always a big moment in a relationship, a huge sort of thing that you'd probably been thinking for a while before you said it, you know, the way before you get the courage to say it. So I just want to know how that worked out. Did you have to go back for work? Did you feel like, look, this can't go on indefinitely, I just need to get my life back? Or what was the motivation?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the big motivation was definitely work. You know, there was a lot of work that I was able to do remotely. And of course, I'm remote working now, but there was sort of, you know, things that I really had to be in Chicago to be able to do. And part of it was just the timing of the tickets and the airlines and everything as well, because I had booked the ticket much earlier on and thought maybe that I'd be able to move it or change it. But then, you know, as it was approaching, I was on the phone with the airlines and they were saying, you know, basically it's going to be really expensive if you try to move it. We're not sure when it will be affordable again. So it became a thing of, well, you know, I go home this day or I don't know when, you know, and I didn't feel like I could have that degree of uncertainty. And I really, yeah, I felt that I had to get back to work. And so that was really the motivation, but yeah, it was definitely a strange, difficult thing.
So, I suppose I'm going to ask you obviously where things are at now, but before that, he must have finished the film quite quickly because he's got it into a film, the Galway film, Fla, is that right?
Right, yes.
It won this amazing thing where it's going to be under consideration for the short films and the Oscars, like,
right.
Which is just, you must have been, when did you get that news?
Yeah, I was pretty, pretty shocked by that. I sat here with my friends here and watched the stream of it when it was announced, and then yeah, called Michael David and was pretty shocked. You know, it's definitely very 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 strange from my perspective being in it. It's a pretty surreal thing.
How does it work now? What's the timeline?
I couldn't tell you. I think, Michael David's been really involved with that and figuring out the next steps for it and everything.
Okay.
But yeah, pretty wild thing.
But it's amazing. And so tell me this, what is your relationship status now with Michael David?
Yeah. So, you know, we're absolutely still in touch. We're still very close. I think, you know, now we're very far apart and, you know, it's unclear whether, you know, one will... ever be able to see each other again. But I think the big takeaway from being there in Ireland with him, very much something we talked about a lot, was how much we were living in the present. You know, we really didn't know how much longer I would be there. We didn't know what would happen next. We didn't know what would happen with the world. And so that was really something that was a huge learning experience I took out of it, was really like kind of honing that ability to just take each day at a time and live in the present. And I think that's the same philosophy we're taking now, is just, you know, who knows what the future is, who knows what comes next, but just trying to both kind of take each day as it comes and still, you know, on very, very good terms.
Yeah. Is he your boyfriend?
I don't think we're, you know, labeling anything right now.
So we're not talking about a long distance relationship then? Again, no labels. Is that what you're going to tell me?
Exactly.
Okay. I wanted a bit more because I wanted to think that you were making plans to move back, or he was making plans to move over to you. Do you miss him a lot or not? Or have you settled back in and kind of, is it more like a dream now?
No, you know, I think it's still something that's very real. And it was such a funny transition coming back, because, you know, when I first got back home, it was sort of amazing, right? Like, oh, I can do whatever I want now. You know, I can watch whatever TV shows I want. I can listen to the music I want to listen to. And having that alone time was really nice. But that didn't last very long. And definitely it's been, you know, really hard to be back home and away from him. And yeah, certainly a lot of my friends saying, you know, it's great to have you back, but why did you leave Ireland? You know, but, you know, I think this was a wild experience, even aside from the pandemic, but there is still this ongoing pandemic. And so I think the future in every way is so unclear. You know, I really have no idea what the future is for any part of my life right now because of everything that's going on. And so I think that kind of applies to this as well.
Between each other, do you feel it's unfair to put any pressure on each other? Like, I'm just wondering, are you back on Tinder? Is he back on Tinder? Is it kind of like leaving things open for people and not putting pressure on each other?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I won't get into any of the details of all that. But, you know, kind of like I said, really the foundation of our whole experience was communicating a lot. We knew that it was a really kind of bizarre, intense experience. And so we really got good at communicating. And I think that's true now too, where we're extremely honest with each other and really, really communicate well. And that's, I think, really the foundation of everything for us.
I have to just tell people, if anyone's wondering about what the noises are, I think they're coming from Mimi's house. Mimi has two cats and they seem very noisy.
They're very big, so they're knocking quite a few things over in the back.
Yeah, but I think they're basically going, what are you doing? Pay some attention. And they're sort of... And listen, I'm also interested in your broken heart as well and how that's healing.
Yeah, you know, that's still a very... Oh man, that's, you know, still a very difficult thing, and so yeah, that's part of everything too. That's definitely something that I'm very much still going through, and yeah, and very, you know, grateful to have and have had Michael David in my life, helping me through that.
I mean, I think because you did things in such a, well, it wasn't your fault, but things happened in such an escalated, strange fashion. Normally, even if you went over for your 5 days, you'd have come back, you'd have continued on that process of healing, you'd have had more time, you know, you didn't have that. So the trauma of that last relationship is still not dealt with, and you probably need that time in real life to do that before making any big decisions about big long-term relationships anyway, you know. I would imagine, with my psychologist hat on, I'm not a psychologist.
No, but that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
So I think it sounds like the way you're approaching this next bit is quite sensible and level-headed.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the Mills and Boone sort of answer we wanted necessarily.
Yes.
You have Mills and Boone over there. Of course you do.
No, I don't think we do.
Well, Mills and Boone, you'll have to go and Google it now after you speak to me. Mills and Boone are these romance novels. Very cheesy, very corny, usually involving some very, very rich man. It's all very heteronormative, and it's and like the sex is very chaste, but quite, you know, it's quite raunchy as well. And you know, the kind of things that your granny would have read, and then you just sneak them out of her bookshelf, you know.
Absolutely, that's so excellent.
Yeah, I definitely recommend for the laugh. They're a good laugh. But anyway, the thing is, the Mills and Boones always have these very sickeningly romantic endings. They always end very well, but this is ending well too. Not in that way.
Right. I think the beginning of our whole story together was so dramatic and intense, which was actually wonderful. And yeah, I think both of us would say, you know, I don't have a single regret. It was, you know, just really fantastic. And I'm so glad I went, and it was really a beautiful experience. But yeah, I think it started out so dramatic. And so now trying to be a little more level-headed about it, as you say.
Well, okay, here's my prediction, you know, I've taken off my psychologist hat, I'm now in my fortune teller hat, okay, so I think that, when is the Oscars, are they usually January, something like that? So then you get nominated, and then you come together at the Oscars, and then it all kicks off again, you know? You're both in your finery, and you're both at the celeb parties, and suddenly it all, you know, that would be another phase of it. What do you think?
That would be very cool. That would certainly be a very, very cool thing.
I think that's definitely, I can see you up there getting the award, and then, you know, the next phase of your life begins.
Absolutely.
And part two of the film is made.
There you go. There you
How
go.
To fall in love again at the Oscars. Okay, so if anybody says anything, I said it first, all right?
You predicted it, absolutely.
Mimi, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I wish you all the best with everything, not just your love life, but with your work and everything that you're doing, because you're obviously very talented, and I'm sure you have so much ahead of you. So we really appreciate you coming on the podcast to talk to us about it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This is lovely.
Thanks, Mimi.
Thanks very much to Mimi Wilcox. It really is a great film, and we wish them all success with it. Now, being honest, it doesn't sound to me like the love story has legs, but sure, you never know what will happen. And it really did cheer me up, so I hope it did the same to you. That's it for today. Remember to send us your good news to the Women's Podcast at irishtimes.com and on social at IT Women's Podcast. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, and by Suzanne Brennan with JJ Vernon on sound. Mind yourselves, and I'll talk to you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.